This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Our number three, we are gearing up for our fourth fish fry. I cannot believe it's number four, stop number four already. Wow. We are more than halfway along here. Queen of All Saints tomorrow on Christopher Drive. It's going to be fantastic. We'll be there live starting at 3. And the whole gang will be there. Even Ethan is out there tomorrow.
Yes. Oh, great.
We had to keep him in the studio a little bit. Last week he was there with us, but that was because Fred was out. But we'll have Fred, Sue will be there, Ethan, and the whole gang doing the roundtable. We have Paul Hall with some entertainment stuff after Sue's News, a live Sue's News. We will have Cusimano on some sports stuff. And also in the 5 o'clock hour, George Gray, our friend from The Price is Right, is in town. I think it's baseball-oriented. Luckily, the game's getting underway because then he doesn't have to go to the game tomorrow and cancel on us, which is one of the things we didn't want to have happen. So we're looking forward to seeing George. I think it's been a little while. I'm not so sure we've seen him this year, have we?
I don't know if we have. No, we have. We have. Once.
You think so? Was it in January?
Yeah, it was early.
It might have been in January.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, come out to the fish fry tomorrow, and then the rest of the tour includes St. Mary Magdalene in Brentwood. I know, Sue, you are pretty geared up about Millstadt, Illinois, Ott's Tavern.
I love that.
On the 11th. You didn't really hear much because you were out about the Kilmeade event on Saturday. There was
How
a lot of
it?
Sue. I think I sent you a text. There was a lot of people requesting Sue Thomas. It was fantastic. It really was.
Oh, that's great.
The venue was awesome. Brian was signing all the books in the afternoon, even though I accused him of doing it with the auto pen. And he did the meet and greet. The VIP folks came through. And his show is, you know, and I told him this yesterday. The beginning of the show for me was very fascinating. And I have more of a accurate take on the beginning because once he got about a half hour in, I had to go backstage and figure out when I was going to be on stage. But you would have loved it because he kind of did a little bit of the Kilmeade origin story, you know, playing soccer when he was young, some of the achievements, some of the defeats, some of the disappointments. And then he got into the pictures of Brian when he was younger, by the way. It's, you know, we all have awkward pictures. If you saw pictures of me in high school, you'd be like, oh my God, because I was a fat, dorky kid. But he doesn't look like he does. He does look very different.
Oh, interesting.
But one of my favorite things, and it was, I don't know, a lot of people might be able to do this, but he showed a picture because the theme was sort of, you know, not giving up in all of this. I'm minimizing it because he did a really good job of explaining all this. But he was showing these images of his rejection letters. So one slide had, I don't know, maybe 12 rejection letters. And then he said, did I mention the rejection letter? And there's another slide and there's like 24. And then another one, there's 50.
Wow.
And he had this area in his home. He's got a big kitchen. He admitted that. That had, it must have been 100 rejection letters.
Up from what?
That he had
from
gotten.
A book or from
this
a
is
jobs?
All from jobs from okay. back when he was younger, you know,
wow.
before he was on with Fox. And, you know, he's a hardworking person. He stayed.
He is.
Our friend Chris Smith, of course, Chris, who was shot in the head, and he's about to have a book come out. Chris stuck around, and Brian was signing books till like 5:30.
Wow, that's impressive.
I'm sorry, 11. What am I thinking? 5:30 was the VIP. It was like 11:30. So the whole day, it was a very long day. Everyone loved the factory. We did miss you. I had a ton of listeners that wanted to come out and meet you, Sue.
That's nice.
But
I'm
you
sorry.
Had previous engagements, yes. And we understand that. We have a mayor's election next week here in St. Louis. We are hoping that we can get rid of Tish finally, and it's certainly looking that way. We're going to talk about that quite a bit tomorrow on the roundtable, but Jane's going to join us with a bit of a preview this afternoon. There is... we'll talk about a few things. The governor finally signed the bill that sets up a police commission, and local control will no longer be in play. That will have to be put together by August. So 5 members of that board, people who live in the city of St. Louis, appointed by the governor, they have to be I think they still have to be confirmed by the Board of
Aldermen.
That
makes sense.
Right? But we'll find all that stuff out from Jane here as she joins us at the bottom of the hour. Let's see what I can get to. I thought Senator Schmidt was going to be with us here, but apparently that is not something that's going to happen. So we'll have to pivot a little bit and hope that he jumps on. There was one thing that I saw. I haven't even heard this, so I'll call a little bit of an audible here, Sue. We were in the 3 o'clock hour doing the show. I looked up at the Fox screen, and there was apparently this woman from Pennsylvania, this lawmaker, who's trying to make the case that biological men and biological women athletes are exactly the same. There's
it makes
really
no sense.
There's no difference here. Here's what she said.
Female bodies are just as strong, as fast and capable as male bodies. For what reason, other than political gain, are we spending time and taxpayer dollars on a completely made up issue? I want all girls to know that there are elected officials like me who would never underestimate your ability to beat a boy at their own sport.
Okay, whatever.
Jeez, lady.
That is a fundamental misunderstanding,
yes,
of everything surrounding this issue, and she's just lying to people. Either that or she's a complete idiot, which
yeah, I'm not
there's
sure.
Certainly the possibility of that, but that's just so dishonest, right?
Yes, it is.
And I think 90% of the country are kind of on to that at this point. I think we do have Senator Schmidt on the line, which is awesome. Eric, how are you this afternoon?
I'm great, Mark. How are you doing?
Fantastic. You're back in the district, but not at Busch Stadium. Is that true?
I just flew in, and I didn't think I was going to be able to make it. And then there was a rain delay, but I was in the air, and so I would have loved to be there. But I didn't think it was going to work out. We had votes this afternoon. So anyway,
I also think what I heard there is the Mark Reardon show is far more important than me going to a baseball game. Yeah,
of course.
Well, let me start. I heard you on Laura's show last night. You did great. I want to talk about some of the stuff that is related to what's going on with Signal, et cetera. But let's talk about the F-47 because you played a huge role. This is a big deal for the country. It's certainly a big deal for St. Louis.
It is. It's a huge deal for St. Louis. I mean, if you think about it, the F-15 that they're still making at Boeing was awarded in the early 1970s. I mean, this is a generational kind of award of a contract for the men and women of this region. I had an uncle that worked at McDonnell Douglas for years. It's just been iconic, and we build the best aircraft in the world, military aircraft. And so this is the most advanced aircraft in the history of the world. It'll fly faster, further, see further, carry a bigger payload, be stealthier than anything the world's ever seen. It's going to be built right here in St. Louis. So we're really proud of that. And Holloman had an article that kind of, I guess, sort of chronicled a little bit of it. We're really working on this. The Biden administration wanted to pause it. We made sure there was money in it. Talked to Pete Hegseth even during his confirmation hearing about it. Talked to President Trump about it. I mean, this was a big deal for me. It was a big deal for our state. So I'm thrilled that this is just going to be something that's, I mean, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs. It's a $20+ billion contract. It's $100+ billion in investment, all the indirect jobs associated with this. And I think this plays into, I talked to you about this a little bit before last year, really we have the chance to be the defense tech capital of the United States of America because we've got Boeing, we've got NGA West, we've got the Taylor Geospatial Institute. There's a lot of things happening in St. Louis that I think are cause for optimism.
One of the things that Joe highlighted in his piece in the Post, Holloman, he talked about how you kind of worked on this with other members of Congress. You mentioned Roger Wicker of Mississippi. You're obviously on the Armed Services Committee. He's on that committee. I think he's was the ranking Republican before things changed over here. But you guys worked together on this to a certain extent?
Yeah, so Roger Wicker from Mississippi is now the chairman of the Armed Services Committee. We brought him in to St. Louis in the fall to meet to get a briefing on this at Boeing to kind of see the progress of what their investment already was and the jobs that could be associated with this, and certainly wanted to have Senator Wicker on our side, and he was very helpful, and he was also helpful during the NDAA, which we do every June, which sort of authorizes the nearly $900 billion worth of spending we do for our national defense. And so kind of talk to him about the things that are happening in Missouri. We've got a lot going on here. In addition to the veterans and the people who are actively serving right now from Missouri, you know, we've got Whiteman Air Force Base, which is the home of the B-2 stealth bomber. That is going to be replaced with the B-21 stealth bomber, the next generation bomber. That will also be at Whiteman Air Force Base. And now we've got the F-47 that'll be produced here in addition to the F-15EX that they build there, all the other aircraft. So there's a lot going on, and there's a lot of discussion about, you know, really revitalizing our military industrial base. It's really important. And I think St. Louis can really be at the epicenter of that. That's certainly one of the things that I'm pushing for. And I'm just trying to bring as many allies on board as possible.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know that one of the things that the article mentioned is that when Senator Wicker came to St. Louis, that you toured the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. Are you under the impression at this point that are there potentially DOGE cuts to that group? Because that was something that people kind of spread a few weeks ago, and I don't know if that was factual at all. Do you know anything?
I think people have thrown that out. I don't think so. Yeah. And really what the center of what DOGE is doing, the best way to think about it is this. We took in about $4 trillion, or I'm sorry, we spent about $4 trillion in 2019. So pre-pandemic spending, we spent $4 trillion, okay? We take in $5 trillion now. We spend $7 trillion. So really what we're trying to do is to get to pre-pandemic levels plus inflation, not touch Medicaid, not touch Social Security, not touch Medicare, and get to a place where in a few years we can actually have a balanced budget. And so the number of positions created by the Biden administration, the number of jobs, positions and the amount of money that was spent in the federal government over a four-year period is astounding, Mark. And so really what we're trying to do is we can't spend $2 trillion more than we take in every year. It's just not sustainable. So if you want to understand why inflation is so high, it's because we squeezed energy production and we spent all that money. And if we rein that in and we open up energy production, we're going to be more prosperous than we've ever been. So NGA West, it plays a really important role in our national defense. If you think about the strategic missile launches that happen around the world, including that happens here. Project Maven, which is sort of a very top secret effort in the United States, that happens here. So all of those assets, the skilled labor associated with that, we can expand that and blow that out in this region, and again be a tech hub. We know we're going to need to modernize. We know we're going to be more nimble. We know we need procurement reform and all that. A lot of that can happen here in St. Louis.
It's awesome. Great. Senator Eric Schmidt is with us. So let me take you to the signal controversy. Like I said, I thought you did a great job on Laura's show last night. But the night before, I kind of listened to her because, you know, I'm leaving here and I always want to check out who she has on. And she had Mike Walls on. And I indicated this even to Brian Kilmeade last night. That was no softball interview. She asked tough questions, good questions. Still some mystery outside of, you know, this information being shared. I think the focus is how did Jeffrey Goldberg, the Trump hater, who is not just a reporter for The Atlantic, but he's one of the, you know, he's the chief editor over there. How did he land in this chat? Now, I think people have gone back and forth on whether this was classified information, if it wasn't classified information. I think you've admitted, and other Republicans, and I certainly have, this was a serious thing. It's not to be overlooked whatsoever, but they're calling for resignations and stuff like that right now, Senator.
Yeah, they're blowing it out of proportion because they have nothing else to talk about. They have no leader. They have no agenda. They're a party defined by really fringe issues. None of these journalists, I mean, I said it last night on the show, and again today, we had an armed services hearing today with some of the undersecretaries. They're going through confirmation. And the press is just sort of camped out on Capitol Hill to ask about people resigning and da-da-da. And I made the point again, like, none of these journalists asking these questions never lifted a finger to investigate that the, you know, commander in chief couldn't put two sentences together for 4 years. He had his finger on the nuclear arsenal, and evidently everything, you know, he's president auto pen. Like, it's insane. So look, clearly this was a mistake to add the reporter in, but the Biden administration okayed Signal to be used as an app, you know, to talk. It's double encrypted. It's end-to-end encrypted. To have policy conversations. There wasn't top secret information involved here. There weren't, you know, not routes. There wasn't the sort of the war plans that you would see when you're in a truly secure environment. Now, again, it was a mistake to have them on there. There's no doubt about that. But I think the Democrats are blowing this out because they have nothing and they want to fill that void with this, as opposed to, by the way, a very successful effort to take out the Houthis, an organization that's been firing drones at our aircraft carriers and our military personnel, and Joe Biden didn't do anything about it. They were funded by the Iranians. They still are funded by the Iranians, who were broke under President Trump, who then, when they, you know, sort of didn't enforce the sanctions, got rich and funded Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis. So President Trump's been decisive. He's taken action. That gets lost in all this because They're trying to make this into something much bigger than it is.
Look, this is the same crew. This is why some of this, well, not some of it, a lot of it falls flat with not only you, me, but a lot of people. The same people that are screaming about national security were perfectly okay with literally millions of people, including men from China, you know, Chinese nationals, crossing our border over the last 4 years. They didn't want to investigate that at all. They just wanted to blame Republicans for not signing a bill that clearly wouldn't have made a difference, because President Trump has closed the border successfully and the crossings in February were at like an all-time low.
Yeah, not only that, when Lloyd Austin went MIA as the Secretary
of Defense,
it was the hospital, a couple of weeks,
yeah.
Didn't notify the President of the United States. They weren't doing journalism. the Afghanistan, the disastrous Afghanistan withdrawal, there was no like Pulitzer Prize-winning journalism to uncover how the heck that happened. And a lot of men and women lost their lives, actually, that instance, including Jared Schmitz from this area. So, again, it's just it to your point. Was this a mistake to add the journalist? Yes. Is this thing been blown out of proportion to score political points? Of course. And that's just sort of the state of play.
What would you say, before I let you go, one question, just because this is certainly an area that I'm a little uncomfortable with this administration. And admittedly, I'm not an expert on tariffs, but the tariffs make people nervous. Blake Hurst, who's a farmer here in Tarkio Center, I don't know if you know Blake, but he's been on the show before. He wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal last week about how some of this stuff is hurting farmers. Obviously, the announcement yesterday was on the auto industry. Some of this certainly will end up in helping American workers. But I'm guessing you've had some people express some concern about the tariffs.
Yeah, I think, though, that here's the way I would try to describe it, and this is probably a longer form conversation, but if you think about it, after World War II, the United States gave Europe and Japan a lot of breaks so they could get back on their feet. We were very clear-eyed about beating Soviet communism. After the Berlin Wall goes down, after the Cold War ends, we had a foreign policy then that never really changed. We had an economic policy that never really changed. The globalists got in charge of all these institutions where borders didn't matter. We were getting ripped off, but it didn't matter because we were supposedly building goodwill. But the trade deals that were executed for a long, long time and the barriers that were created that we never challenged really hampered our ability to produce things. And it was devastating for places across this country as those jobs then went overseas. They went to China. We let China into the World Trade Organization. We let China rip us off for decades. We let Europe, by the way, you can't sell an American car in Europe. So what's happening now? President Trump is essentially saying, this is the, if you want to think about it, we've got the best economy in the world. Everybody wants to sell our stuff here. If you want to do business here, maybe there's a membership fee to be able to do it, but we're going to treat you like you treat us. And the net result of that is going to be one of two things. One is the trade barriers are going to come down. We have more access to more markets for our farmers and our ranchers. Or number two, there'll be greater investment here because our policy will be, if you want to make stuff here in the United States, if you want to be an American business, things are going to be great for you. If you don't, all bets are off, right? All bets are off. So what do you see then? Honda's decided to build their plant here and not in Mexico. Mercedes-Benz has decided to build their plant here, not in Mexico. Apple's decided to, you know, invest hundreds of billions of dollars here, not in China. TCM that makes the superconductor chips, they're going to do it here now, not somewhere else. You're seeing NVIDIA that makes the really high-end chips. They're going to make the investment here. So companies are making the bet now that this is the best place to do it. They don't want to risk those other issues because these other countries have messed around for too long with us, and it's been too expensive for us to get our goods to other markets. So I think those barriers are going to come down. We're going to produce more things in this country. And ultimately, this is a new phase. We're moving away from this globalist ideology that's hurt too many working folks across the country, including in Missouri.
Well stated, Senator Eric Schmidt. By the way, the Cardinals are up 1-0 on the Twins, so there's some good news right there. Awesome to have you.
Sonny Gray on the mound.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's good, right? Couple innings and no runs up from Sonny Gray. Thank you, Eric. I appreciate it. We'll see you soon, okay?
All right, guys.
All right, take care. Fish Fry Friday coming up tomorrow at Queen of All Saints on Christopher Drive in South County. Jane Duker will be on the roundtable panel with Jeff Rainford and also says Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman. Jane is with us for a little preview and to talk about some issues related to the city and the county. How are you this afternoon? Well, you're not there. I even locked her in. I saw the line was there. I pressed it, and now she's not there. So let's see if we can do that again. Take two. Jane, are you there?
I am. Oh, for some reason, it just went bing, knocked me off.
It instinctively,
but I called back.
Yeah, it instinctively dropped you. Well, we're looking forward to the fish fry. You know, Fred is back from Japan. Sue has some brand new Sue's News T-shirts, by the way. I just put that up on the X formerly Twitter. Yeah, you're going to have to check
that out. Awesome. No question. I'll get one.
You worked very, very hard, Jane Duker, as a lobbyist and someone on the other side full of common sense on the crime issue to get this bill in the hands of Governor Kehoe. You worked behind the scenes representing the cops. It finally got there. He signed it today, didn't he, Jane?
I mean, it was like, you know, I went to the bill signing yesterday at the Capitol, but the one today was really emotional. And, you know, people don't know. I mean, a lot of people don't know. Governor Kehoe is from North St. Louis.
Right.
He had many family members that were police officers. His son just bought a house, you know, two blocks from, you know, the POA hall. You know what I mean? And he's like, this matters. And this is, you know, he got very emotional. And he said, you know, this is so very important. And it was bipartisan. There was a great group of people there today. I mean, like Steve Ellman came. We had chiefs from all over. Troy Doyle was there. You know, we had chiefs from all over. We had a lot of police officers. Unfortunately, the police chief had CompStat at the same time as the bill signing to ensure that there were numerous cops that couldn't come. But that's okay, because that nonsense is hopefully going to stop soon.
The mayor, of course, was there. Tish was there, I'm certain, right? Showing her support.
Right. Yeah, no. She was writing nasty tweets, you know. And so, but yeah, it's a big deal. And so to see the hope on police officers' faces, I had dozens come up to me and say, thank you so much for everything you do. Now we have hope. Now we feel like, you know, we could stay. We feel like, you know, we can actually talk to other people about coming on to the department because of this new structure. And so, I mean, that right there is enough for me to do it, is to hear them have hope.
So what happens from here? Because the one member of the commission will be the mayor, whoever wins the election. So let's say Kara's the winner. She'd be on the commission. Then the governor has to pick five other members. And do they have to be confirmed by the Board of Aldermen?
No. So there will be four citizen members that will be appointed interim because the legislature is not in session. But those four have to be, you know, St. Louis City citizens, and they have to be confirmed by the Missouri Senate.
Oh, okay, by the Senate. All right.
And that was because the Democratic members of the Senate wanted Senate confirmation versus board or versus any other type of confirmation. So that was a compromise given to the Democrats. And, you know, half of the Missouri Democrats voted for the bill. So, which is good.
Let me slay it on there right there. So if someone's appointed and they don't like that selection from Governor Kehoe, how much power would they wield in the Senate, given the numbers anyway, to, you know, throw a wrench into that?
Well, it depends, because I think senators do like to give some comedy to the senators that have appointees that are in their district. So, I think it depends on how reasonable everybody's being.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, you know, with any luck, Steve Butts is going to be the new senator, one of the new senators from the city of St. Louis. And then, you know, Stephen Roberts. So, yeah, that would be fine. And I think that it would all work out. They work well with people. You know, they work well with their colleagues.
But so, this all has to be in place by August, right?
Correct. So within 30 days, the governor has to appoint a transition manager. That's the person who really, because look, there's a lot that has to be done internally to make sure that everything sort of goes smoothly. And there's a lot of governmental stuff, you know, that needs to be ironed out and returned to the way it was, you know, or even better. And then that person has to be in place in 30 days. The board, he has 90 days from yesterday to appoint the board. Now, there is one board member that can be a city business owner. Now, they can live outside the city, but not far, but they wanted to have a business owner on the board. They're non-voting, But at least they get to be on the board. They get to hear everything. They get to offer their perspective as a business owner.
That was another one of those compromises that was kind of worked out in the the end as well. Okay, well, we're going to talk more about all of this on the roundtable tomorrow. While I have you here, let me just kind of touch base on a couple of things, and these will also be topics tomorrow. Sue, you missed this earlier this week, and I didn't spend a lot of time on it, but there was an event that Kara Spencer had the other night, and what happened, Jane? Tish just basically broke in
she
and
showed up.
You know, folded her arms and stared. It was like a weird deal, wasn't
it? She crashed her opponent's campaign event. And stood there with her sunglasses on, her mean girl face, and her arms crossed at Kara's event. It was unbelievable. And had the security detail. I mean, can you imagine having to drag these cops into this political event that you're crashing? I mean,
is bizarre. It was really weird because
bizarre.
It doesn't that kind of thing. I mean, the way that it was covered, you tell me, you're around these politicians a lot more, but that kind of stuff just doesn't happen, right? There's protocol.
No, it does. You know what? It's low rent. You know what? Why don't you have your own campaign event instead of crashing someone else's? I mean, you know what I mean?
I do.
And I don't know who she thought she was intimidating. She wasn't intimidating anybody. And I mean, you lost. Like, she had over 60% of the vote. You had like 30. So I don't know who thinks they're intimidating who. And so I thought that was strange. But what is, you really do need to look at some of the comments on social media. I mean, the internet never disappoints. I mean, and people were spot on. They're like, this is just desperate and sad. And it just confirms what everybody's already thinking, is that she just does not have the temperament to be an executive.
No.
And I mean, just that kind of petty, it's petty. It's pathetic and petty. So I thought that was a good day for Kara, because if they're chasing you, they're the underdog.
I think you're right about that. Now, I had one other topic for tomorrow. We're going to talk probably even more on this on Monday. I had Dennis Hancock on in the last hour about Proposition B. We didn't get to really spend as much time as I would have liked. I had to rush through it a little bit. But I'm not completely sold on Prop B. You're a proponent, though, aren't you?
I'm a proponent because, okay, for example, you have the director of the Department of Health. There was a plan out there to kill all the dogs. Okay, there was. There was a plan in her office. She may not have liked it. I have no idea. Sunshine Law, people requested it. She lied and said it wasn't there. And then it turns out, yes, there was a euthanasia plan. She's like, well, I didn't like it. But it was there. And you have to be transparent with people. You do. There are allegations that she fudged the numbers to the feds because they're trying to get this healthcare clinic blessed by the federal government. And, you know, and she lies about that. When you refuse to give the truth to the county council, they can't do their job. Now, there's a state law that says you better cooperate with the legislature. The executive branch better not, because so this is not new. And so he instructs them, the county executive instructs his directors not to talk to them. You know, we have an email from one director who said, I received a request from Councilwoman Webb and I'm not going to answer. Like, government cannot function if the executive branch refuses to give information so that the legislators can properly appropriate and determine whether the programs are worthy of taxpayer dollars.
Yeah, and I understand
over
for sure.
500 municipalities in Missouri have this provision. If you're a third or fourth class city, the legislature mandates that you have a provision that allows the legislature to take away, to get rid of department directors if the executive refuses to do it in times when, you know. I mean, you have a county councilor in St. Louis County who got people to sue her own client. She got department directors to sue St. Louis County, who is her client. Now, the county executive refuses to do anything about that. In fact, he's encouraging it. And so, I mean, if directors, they have to be strong enough. When you're in that level of government, you have to be strong enough to say, you know what, I'm not going to do anything that's inappropriate.
Yeah.
You just have to be. And if you're not, you need to go. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk, you know, again, we'll get into that tomorrow on the roundtable, and we'll toss it around, because it is, it's interesting. And I see both ways, and I understand that five of the seven members have to vote, you know, to make a move on that. Yeah. Right. So it's not
and
like
they,
one
and,
council
and
member
get,
can do something.
Correct. And I think you have to have two sign the resolution. And, you know, they get an opportunity to come before the council and say, okay, this is why you should not do this. I mean, they, you know, and by the way, Sam Page can fire them for any reason or no reason at all. Here, they have to, you know, they have to actually give process, and you have to get, you know, that represents, you know, I don't know, I mean, two-thirds of the county's representatives saying we're going to throw you out. I mean, that does not happen often. If it did, you'd see it happening all over the state of Missouri, because we have, like I said, over 500 municipalities and local governmental entities that have this provision, and we don't see chaos.
Yeah. No, I understand. So, well, we'll talk about it more tomorrow.
Cool.
You're all fired up.
All
we're
right.
going to be fired up. We'll see you on the roundtable. Fred is back from
so
Japan.
Excited.
Sue has Sue's News t-shirts.
Yeah,
we're
I got
be
you
locked
one.
Locked and loaded for a great show tomorrow. Oh, and Jane, we have George Gray doing The Price is Wrong live at the
Stop.
Fish Fry. Yeah.
If people don't tune in, it is the most fun ever. Oh, I'm thrilled.
Yeah, and we haven't done one of those live at a fish fry in a couple of years, so that's going to be great. We'll see you tomorrow afternoon at 3. Don't be late
tomorrow,
for once.
Guys.
How about that? Try here,
I
little
will be
New Year's
so
goal.
Good.
Okay, we'll see. She's been really late lately. We're coming back with Audio Cut of the Day. Yeah, we have a live broadcast at the Fish Fry Friday location of Queen of All Saints in South St. Louis County on Christopher Drive. And truth be told, give the listeners a little insight here to the way that the show is put together. We have George Gray from The Price is Right in town. He is Drew Carey's voice, and he's like the modern-day Johnny Olsen. And I actually contract out with former producer emeritus Dave Klein to get the items, because we all participate, so
yeah.
We can't do that. And Dave's actually very good at gathering the items. But George Gray is a pro, and he noticed when the items were shared with him this afternoon that a couple of them might have been a little too saucy for a fish fry at a Catholic church.
That's 100% accurate.
And he's a pro, and that's why. So we are redoing those. But, you know, thank goodness we didn't realize that like at 5:15 last night when we were about to do something naughty at the church. We were getting kicked out. So we're going to fix that, and everything
yes.
will be, you know, family-oriented, if you will, tomorrow at the fish fry. But I'm very much looking forward to that. We have a great time meeting the listeners. Sue's got a couple of limited edition T-shirts that say Sue's News because her husband just made them. We have to do this more officially, though, because
yeah.
those look great, and there would be demand for those items,
okay.
for sure. You sound like you don't believe me.
Yeah.
Hey, this could be the hottest item that we've ever sold at 97.1 FM Talk. You don't know.
Oh, well, that's true.
We might try
that's
that.
True.
All right, whoop, that's the wrong one. Look at that. I almost hit the Sue's News open. Nope.
Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, so I'm going to call a bit of an audible here. It's not often that I'm going to share some audio with you that I haven't actually heard, but Fred just shared this with me, and I will tell you that my head kind of paid attention in the studio when earlier this hour, Brett Baer's show was featuring essentially a big room of people that are working on Doge, including Elon, but there were others there in the room talking about where these cuts are going to come.
There are over 15 million people that are over the age of 120 that are marked as alive in the Social Security system.
And that's an accurate figure.
Yes. Correct.
15 million.
Correct. This has been something that's been identified as a problem, again, pre-existing problems, since 2008 at least, from an IG report. So there were some great people working at the Social Security Administration that found this, 2008, and nothing was done. And so 15 to 20 million Social Security numbers that were clearly fraudulent were floating around that can be used only for bad intentions. There'd be no way to use those for good intentions. And so what one of the things the Doge team is doing is carefully and very methodically looking at those and making sure that any fraudulent ones are eliminated.
So 100% of members of Congress should
Jeez,
support that.
Yes.
There should be no dissension
yes.
in the ranks, because who wouldn't want to root that nonsense out? How about the National Institutes of Health?
Today, if you're an NIH researcher and you get a $100 grant at your university, today you get to spend 60 of that and your university spends 40 of that. The policy that we're proposing to make is that you get to spend 85 of that and your university spends 15. So that's more money going directly to the scientists who are discovering new cures. Another example at NIH is today they have 27 different centers. They got created over time by Congress, and they're typically by disease state or body system. There's 700 different IT systems today at NIH.
700 different IT systems.
IT software systems.
They don't communicate.
They can't speak to each other.
So that sounds nuts.
They have 27 different CIOs. And so when you think about making great medical medical discoveries, you have to connect the data.
Time out. You said 27 different chief information officers?
Correct.
And most of them are non-technical.
So there's a lot there.
There's a lot of opportunity. It will make science better.
No. So this is a fascinating interview, and I haven't heard anything like it yet. We've heard Elon interviewed. We haven't heard the team, the Doge team. But again, put this in front of some of the nutty Dems and say, what's wrong with you know, consolidating, making government more efficient? Computer systems.
When I say that our job is tech support, I really mean it.
Yeah.
We have to fix the computers. If the computers can't talk to each other, you can't get research done. If the computers can't stay online, people won't receive their Social Security. So what we have here are a bunch of failing computer systems that are preventing people from receiving their benefits, that are preventing people from preventing research from happening, that are extremely vulnerable to fraud, and we're fixing it.
Yeah, seems like a terrible thing for them to do, to go in and fix some of these things that have been not fixed for literally decades. And then one of the questions, I guess, here was who's going to benefit? I think Elon's making the case everyone will.
It's going to affect people very positively. So the changes that we're doing here will ensure the solvency of the American government, of the American, of the United States of America. This is what we're trying to do, is ensure that people do receive their benefits in the future. And you can only receive your benefits if the country is operating in a healthy and competent way.
I do think, and I didn't hear the whole interview. I'd love to go back and watch Brett's show. But one of the things that I'm going to keep an eye on, and this is going to be tough, that in order to really get the fiscal situation turned around and to balance the budget, there's no way to do it without going in with changes to Social Security. Now, again, when we say that, I was on the phone with a friend of mine last night that was all freaked out about this. I'm like, dude, anything that's proposed with Social Security, in my experience over the last 30 years, there's never a proposal to change it for those of us who are on the cusp of retirement. So typically, any changes, and maybe there will be some changes made. Maybe the retirement age changes again. Maybe you have folks that are making, you know, $200,000 a year or more, whatever the number might be. They have to pay more in Social Security taxes. I don't know what the answers are, but there are answers, but those are the tough questions that need to be handled. And I don't think Doge is necessarily in charge of that, because that's something that Congress has to do. Sue, we'll see you at the fish fry tomorrow.
Yay!
3 o'clock will be at Queen of All Saints on Christopher Drive.
Get more at 971talk.com.